things every day.
All right, I think we have both of us, right? Liz, are you still there? Yeah. All right, do we have you? Do we have you still?
Yes.
Good. All right, good. All right, so let's get started then. So we are holding on Mem Amud Aleph, eighth line. Okay, we started discussing yesterday. We said that if you have fish that you buy from Goyim, which is partly cut up, but not completely. So we said if you recognize the head and the spines of the fish, then it's mutter. And we discussed, does that mean, first of all, the last thing we mentioned is Gemara has machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. Does it mean you have to be able to recognize both the head and the spine, or one or the other is enough? On top of that, you have when they said Rosh Veshedra, does it mean both, or does it mean one or the other? It could mean one or the other. Rav Nachman says it means one or the other. On top of that, there's also the machlokes. The Torah doesn't say anything about heads, and the Torah says snapper the chaskeset.
Oh, so it's too money.
That's fins and scales. We're not talking about heads or spines. So one way of looking at it is, again, we established before that most kosher fish have rounded heads. As we said, there are a couple of kosher ones, Ara and Talmudah, the Gemara called them, which have pointy heads, but generally speaking, kosher fish have rounded heads, and kosher fish have spines made out of bone, as opposed to tracer fish often have cartilage or no spines at all. So the argument is, Rav Nachman will be saying that as long as you recognize one or the other of those simonim, then that would be enough. So again, on top of that, we have the discussion between Rashi and other Rishonim. Are we talking about that once you recognize the head and the spine, or the head or the spine, then that itself is good enough, as long as you recognize the shape of them. Or whether all that means is that once you see the head and the spine, if you're able to identify, okay, I can identify that this comes from a kosher species of fish, but not just based on the shape. Okay.
I wouldn't recognize that orange just by the head of the
spine.
Okay. I would think I'd
be bolder. If you saw his face, you would recognize him, right?
So the round.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Let's go on in the Gemara. So, Omer Rav Yehuda Mishnei De'ula, Machloitis L'tabel B'tzira. This whole Machloitis about whether you need both the head and the spine to be recognizable, or whether just one or the other, is only when you're talking about whether you're allowed to use the tzira, or you're allowed to use the juice that flows out of each fish when they're salted, and use it for dipping food into or whatever.
Implying
out of the goof one, but if you're talking about eating the fish itself, divrei hakol also, then everybody, even Rav Nachman, would agree it's oster, ad shehei rosh v'shedra nikur, unless you can recognize both the head and the spine. Now, Tosfos asked the question, why should it be any different with the tzir? On the face of it, the tzir is also oster d'oraisa. So Tosfos answers the difference is that tzir... The seer from today for fish, right? So Tosfos answers the difference is that seer could be bottle, where the whole fish could not, because the whole fish is a barrier. A whole fish is a creature, is a naturally occurring creature, a barrier. And as we learned in Makkos, a barrier has a certain significance there beyond regular today. So that's Tosfos's answer. According to Tosfos, then, that's why the Gemara is making a distinction between seer and the fish themselves, because both of them are also Jaraisa, but one can be bottle and one cannot. Other Rishonim take the view that maybe actually seer of Tereza fish maybe is only also Midrabanim. You have a Gemara in Cholin that seems to imply otherwise, but maybe that's not talking about, maybe that's only an Asmasa, maybe it's not an actual Din Jaraisa, or maybe that's talking not about fish, but rather about Shrutin. Seer from Shrutin would be also Jaraisa. Fear from Tereza fish, not necessarily. Okay. Anyway, so that's the vote we're saying in the Gemara over here. There's a difference between the fear or eating the fish itself. Okay, well, it depends. I mean, yeah. Okay.
Very round head.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is it?
And by the way, even you were mentioning salmon yesterday, and young salmon also have rounded heads. When they get older, when they spawn, then they develop sharper heads.
Right. But adult salmon.
Fine, but the adult ones you don't usually eat anyway. They're not usually good to eat.
The fish where it calls it dolphin in the restaurant, everyone goes, no, we'll start calling it mahi-mahi.
Okay, anyway, come on.
It's a dolphin or a mahi-mahi.
Okay, fine. Fine. So then, okay, so Omer of Zera, so Rav Zera says in this connection, may Reish have a machbilma with Siron. Originally, I used to dip my food into sphere of fish, where, again, the fish was raw, cut up, and you only had one simen. You only had, there was no scales on it anymore, but you had either the head or the shedra was recognizable. And Rav Zera at first held, okay, since we have the machloekas of Huna and Rav Nachman, he figured that they're only arguing about eating the fish itself, but the sphere should definitely be mutter according to both of them. Given the Shmaya Lahad the Amr of Yehuda b'Shmei de Ula, but once I heard this that we just said that Rav Yehuda says in the name of Ula, Machloikas the Tavol b'Sir, I'm just the other way around. The Machloikas is about dipping in the Sir, Tavol b'Gufan, but as far as eating the fish itself, the Rehakol also Ad Shehei Rosh v'Shedra Nikar, that when it comes to eating the fish itself, everybody agrees it's also unless you recognize both. So now he realizes there's a Machloikas about the Sir between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. Therefore, b'Sir nami lo matzilma. So therefore, to be on the safe side, says Rav Zera, I don't dip my food in Sir from fish that come like that anymore, because you can't, you can never be sure. Okay. What is the halacha? I'm going to pop Hilchasa, the bottom line halacha, is, in order, it has to be actually a rosh v'shedra nikar shokalachas v'achas. It has to be not only that you recognize the head and the, and the shedra, but it has to be individually of each one. You can't say, for example, you start looking through the barrel, you recognize a bunch of fish that you recognize the head and the spine, you recognize they're from kosher fish or whatever. You can't say, well, that's it, that means all of them are good. No, you have to check each one individually. Because even though and the Ram teaches those, because even though it's true, we said before that ordinarily they don't salt fish of different kinds together because they don't necessarily taste good, but you can't be 100% sure about that. You could say that might be good enough as far as to allow the sear, because the sear of different kinds doesn't blend together well and they're not going to do it. But as far as the fish themselves, there is that concern similar to what we said the other day about Felix, about these small fish, these sardines or whatever, where you have three for ones mixed in. So you have to recognize there is the head and the shedra of every single one. And given that we sear, given that we just said machloikas was about the sear, but everybody agreed that the head, to eat the fish themselves, you need rosh for shedra nikar. If the papa is pointing out the halacha is you need to recognize the rosh for shedra, then yes, he's talking about the sear. He's talking to even use the sear, you need to be able to recognize it. Okay. In other words, in short, the halacha is like Rav Huna, not like Rav Nachman. Okay. So Gemara says, Maitri, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, "Chatiches sheyesh behen simen." If you have pieces of fish in which there is a simen, so you have some of the pieces, for example, have scales on them. Bein b'kolon bein b'mekzotan. Whether all of them have a simen, whether only some of them have a simen. V'afilu be'echad mimeyesh behen. Even if only one out of 100 pieces of fish in the barrel has a simen, that it has scales on it. Kolon mutares. All of them are mutter. And in fact, ma'isa ba'omik. That we have to figure out. In fact, it once happened that a certain guy brought a barrel full of pieces of fish. They found a simen, they found scales on one of the pieces. And Shemingamil says the entire barrel is mutter. So what are you telling me? You have to recognize the head and the spine of every single fish. If we're seeing over here, one piece of fish and then the whole thing is enough.
It's maybe different than those.
Well, no, you were talking about the actual fish itself. You were talking about the actual fish itself. And the point is, once you find a simen in one of them, again, we're not going to assume that he put together different fish of different kinds. We're going to assume it's all the same guy in the quarter.
We don't know.
That's the question. Why? The answer is two. What do you mean? You have a question of trace. You have a question whether it's trace or fish.
Yeah.
Why should we say on the basis of one piece that it's mutter? But yet the braisa is telling us that it is. So what are you telling me, that if you have a bunch of fish, you have to recognize the head and the spine of each one individually in order to eat them, when we see from here, you have one piece in the entire barrel that has scales, and it's enough to be mastered the whole thing? The answer is Tirgum, or Rapapa explained that braisa is talking about Kshehatichos Shavai. That braisa is talking about when all the pieces fit together. If you were to reassemble them like a jigsaw puzzle, you would find that they all actually reassemble together, and you can recognize they all come from the same fish. The Rambam puts it a little bit differently. The Rambam uses the expression shavos, but they're all the same shape. And there's the Bach and the Shach discuss in Yerodea. Does that mean, does that mean that according to the Rambam you would need both, that they have to be the same shape and that they would fit together, like Rashi says? Or is he basically just saying what Rashi is saying in another Lashon? In other words, that they all have the same shape in the sense that they all fit together. They all fit together. Well, that's the point, though. Well, the question is Hoki Maila Memra. If so, then what's the Chiddush? Obviously, if they all fit together like a jigsaw puzzle, then you know it's good. They all came from the same fish. The answer is Mao Detamer, Nechush, Dilma, Isrami. Fine, but you might have to think maybe it could happen. It could happen just at random, by chance, that you have other pieces that fit together over there, even though they're not actually from the same fish. Again, the same way as with an actual jigsaw puzzle, you know, you can sometimes have another piece from a different puzzle that happens to fit in there, even though it's not from that puzzle.
So puzzles are pieces are very good shot.
Yeah, well, okay, same idea over here, though. The point is you could conceivably have a piece that might end up seemingly fitting in there, even though it's not actually from the same fish. Maybe you should be concerned about that. Kamash Malam, that is the Chiddush. We're not concerned about that. It's such a far-fetched thing that we're not concerned about. Therefore, you can be master of the whole barrel once you have one piece in there has scales. But if they don't fit together perfectly like that, then no, you can't, because then you don't know. It might be a mixture of kosher and shayfa pieces of fish.
So if you find the scales outside the pieces in the barrel, that you cannot...
That's a step that you know. That, in fact, that's going to be the next thing we're going to talk about. Wait. Okay.
You were not going to ask them about the sawfish puzzle?
Sawfish puzzle?
Instead of the jigsaw puzzle?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Fine.
Yeah, what about the sawfish
puzzle? I don't know. I have no idea whether the sawfish is kosher or not. Onward. Okay. Ha'hu arba de sachanta de osi l'sichra. It happened once that a boat full of sachanta came to the city of Sichra. Sachanta, as we learned yesterday and the day before, is another word for the chilek that we learned about in the Mishnah, is the small fish, herring or sardines or what have you, that you have many of them together where the juvenile ones, the young ones, don't have scales yet, and therefore you can have chase of fish mixed in among them. What?
They're not offenders, you call them
juveniles. Juveniles don't mean offenders, necessarily. Juveniles means young. But so they don't have scales yet, therefore you can have chalefa fish mixed in among them, and it's not easily visible. So here you had a boat full of sachanta came to Sichra. Nofek Rav Huna Bar Chinana v'chodeh b'kalfi. So Rav Huna Bar Chinana went and saw that there were scales there. V'shalye, and so he said, it's mutter. However, Amole Rava, says, how could you do that? How could you be master of such a thing? Who would there be who would be master of such a thing in a place where there are scales commonly found? Meaning, in other words, you could have, there could be kosher scaled fish over here, and then there could be treifa fish mixed in with them. In fact, Tosta says, but to answer your question about scales on the container, that in fact, so Rav Huna Bar Chinana is talking about apparently there was only one species over there. Therefore, if you have some of them have scales, then you're good. However, Rava argues that you could have. There might have been scales on the boat to begin with from previous runs of fish. So not necessarily does it show that this particular batch is good. So, Nofek Shipuri de Rava Vasa. So there came out shofarim blowing from Rava's basin to say that it's author. Meaning, in other words, when they wanted to proclaim that something is author, when they wanted to make a proclamation from basin, either for Ister or for Heter, they would blow shofarim, and that way everybody hears that there's an announcement being made, and they would come and
listen to what they've decided.
Yes, and then people would pay attention. Rava announced with shofarim that it's awesome. Everybody should know this batch of fish that came in this boat is awesome. Rav Huna Bar Chinana, she put it in Rav Huna Bar Chinana b'shori. Then though there came out shofarim from Rav Huna Bar Chinana's Beit Medrash saying that it's mutter. Now, how they could do that, usually you have the halacha that once one rav has said something is osur, another rav is not allowed to say it's mutter, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. So there's a few different answers among the Farshim how that could be. One answer is that the Gemara is not describing it in chronological order, that Rav Huna Bar Chinana's announcement came out first. Second. Okay. Y'all still there, I hope?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. Okay. So So you have so one answer is that Rav Huna Bar Chinana's announcement came out first. Another answer is he was the one who was master at first before Rava came up with his objection. So therefore he has the right to do it first thing. He has the right to hold by his opinion, even if Rava announced that it's author. Another answer that they say is maybe Rav Huna Bar Chinana was a greater Talmud Chacham. He was at that point on a higher caliber than Rava, and therefore he doesn't have to be bound by Rava's
advice. Rav Huna Bar Chinana the Rosh Yeshiva after Rav Yehuda Bar Yechezkel?
No. After Rabbi Hoda, you had You had Rava. And during the years in between there, you had
Rav Huna Bar Chiya.
Rav Huna Bar Chiya, it's another Amora of that name. Huna was a common enough name in those days. All right.
Yeah. It's not Rav Huna Masura.
It's not, no. I guess not. Okay. Omer, okay. Omer Rav Yirmi Megifti, Lididi Omer Li Rav Papi. So Rav Yirmi Megifti later on says, Rav Papi personally told me that in this connection, in this case over here, Tishora Rav Huna Bar Chiya of Sira. And this that Rav Huna Bar Chiya was saying it's Mutter, these fish, is only talking about the juice of them, the seer, out of the goof on life, but not to eat the fish themselves. He would agree with Rava on that, that there you can't necessarily rely on the scales. Again, like Tosafot said before, maybe seer is only, maybe seer is also daraisa, it can be bottle, unlike the fish themselves, that's not, or maybe like the other Rishonim say, because maybe seer of Tereisha fish is only also darabanan. So therefore, you can be more maker with that, but not necessarily with the fish themselves. However, Omer Rav Ashi, however, Rav Ashi says no. That he only Rav Papa, that was Rav Papi said to Rav Yirmi Megifti. So Rav Ashi says Rav Papa told me. Okay, on the side it says it was also Rav Papi. So in that case, he's contradicting. But okay, whatever. He shorter Rav Huna Bar Chinana after the beguf one. No, when Rav Huna Bar Chinana was master it against Rava, he meant you can eat the fish themselves. You have scales over there, and therefore that's enough of a simon, because given what Tosafot is saying, that you recognize they're all from one species. However, Rav Ashi says, "V'anolei meiser asurina." However, I myself, I don't hold it's completely osur, v'kamali rapapa, because after all, rapapa told me that Rav Huna Bar Chinana said it's completely mutter. V'loi nishra sharina. On the other hand, I don't want to be master it completely, to be master to eat them. Because we said before on the Omer that Rav Yehuda says in the name of Ullah, machloikas l'tabalutzir, on the whole machloikas about whether you can rely on it when you have when you have a mixture over there and you're not sure if all of them are kosher to fish. The machloikas of Rav Huna and Rav Nachman at the top of the Omer is only about dipping into the sir. But as far as eating the fish themselves, you have to be able to recognize the head and the spine of each one individually. And here we can't. So therefore, Rav Ashi is saying, we can't say that the fish are completely also to eat. On the other hand, we can't really be makir it either. You want to dip in the seer, fine. You have a basis, at least based on what Rav Huna Bar Chinana is saying, you have a basis for dipping in the seer. But not to eat the fish themselves, because there you have to be on the safe side and say, not so much, in other words, he's saying, not so much that we're accepting Rava's point, But rather that if we have Rav Papi is saying that even Rav Huna Bar Chinana himself was not master the fish themselves, only their seer, then we don't necessarily have a strong enough basis to be master the fish themselves. So just the seer, right? And even and I mean before we said actually that even with the seer you have to be able to even with the seer we said before you have to be able to recognize that we said before on the Omer that the halacha was we said that the Rav Papa had said the halacha is that you have to be, in order to use the seer you have to be able to recognize the head and the spine of each one, so the Maisa, that's how it comes out. Yosef Rav Chinana Bar Idi Kameder Rav Ada Bar Abba, but Yosef Akama, Rav Chinana Bar Idi one time was sitting in front of Rav Ada Bar Abba as a Talmud, and he was sitting and saying as follows. Okay, so Rav Chinana Bar Idi was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Ada Bar Abba, and he sat and said as follows. He sat and said as follows. Mepharshim point out, by the way, the reason why the Gemara will use the expression Yosef over here twice means first he was sitting as a Talmud. Then when he wanted to say something, he got up to ask for Rishus. And then once he got Rishus, then he sat back down and said what he's going to say. So therefore it's a twice Yosef. Anyway, he sat and said as follows. If a guy brings an areva, meaning a small boat, full of barrels of fish, barrels of seer, the nymphs kill this ba'achas mehen, and you find a kilvis fish in one of them, which we established before that when you have a kilvis fish in it, it shows that it's a kosher fish. It shows that it's kosher seer, right? Suchas kolon mataris. If the barrels are open, then all the barrels are mutter. Stumos, if there's sealed barrels, he muteris v'kolon asuris. then only that sealed barrel is then only that sealed barrel is mutter. All the other ones which don't have a kilvus in them will be osur. What's the logic? Rashi says the logic is if the barrels are open, then we can assume that all of them had a kilvus in them, but all the other kilvuses fell out, jumped out, or whatever. And this particular one happened to have its kilvus left in it. As opposed to if they're sealed, that can't have happened. None of the fish could have gotten out. Therefore, only the one that has a kilvus in it is good.
To make an inference from one to another.
Yeah, but that's how we can assume. If he's bringing a shipload of them, we're saying that if all of them are open and one of them has a kilvus, we can assume they all came from the same place. Now, again, we talked at the top of the Amud. We talked at the end of yesterday's shiur about the question. We said how many kilvus do you need in there? Where the Gemara had made a distinction between open and sealed barrels, where one needs one and one needs two. Where Rashi learned that if the barrels are open, you need two kilvus because one could have just randomly fallen in, and if they're sealed, then one is enough. Whereas Tosfos learns the other way around. If they're sealed, then you need two. But if they're open, then it's good enough to have one because we can assume that the other one jumped out. So similarly over here, when we're talking about the open or the sealed ones, how many you would need, that's subject to the same machloek as the Rashi and Tosfos.
Oh.
Okay. Omalei, so Rav Chinan Ra'idiyah said this, that Rav Ada Ba'aba asked him, Menolocha, where do you get this concept from? To say that once you find a kilvis in one open barrel, then the rest of them are mutter. The answer is mitzvot akroy shmieli. I heard it from three psukim, not literally psukim, but Rav Shmuel and Rav Yechanan. So Rav and Shmuel and Rav Yechanan, who are all as reliable as psukim, as you can take what they said to the bank just as much as if it was an explicit pasuk. Or the Aruch has a different use. They're not kroy, but kiroy. In a few places in the Gemara, it uses the word kiri, which means master in Aramaic. It comes from Greek actually. So therefore, mitzvot kiroi. I heard it from three masters, namely Rav Shmuel and Rav Yisman.
Okay.
So that's it. You can take it to the bank.
It's
established now. Okay. New discussion now. We're still talking about fish, but now we're going to start a new discussion within fish. Till now, we've been talking about the fish themselves.
Now, today, though, we don't know exactly what's seer.
Seer is the juice of fish. I mean, it's the juice.
Any fish?
Well, pretty much. I mean, so again, there is a difference between seer and murias, because seer is just the liquid that oozes out of the fish after it's salted. Murias is where they have fish fat blended in there, and we talked several times about sometimes in those days, at least, they might mix wine into it, so then you have more of an issue.
But if we're just talking about
seer, again, the bottom line halacha that comes out from our Gemara over here is that even with seer, you still have to know that it came from kosher fish. Even despite the arguments we were saying before in the Sugya that maybe it's only also the Rabbanon or maybe it's Bottle, the fact of the matter is seer from Tereza fish eventually is still also somehow or other. Therefore, if you don't know that it's from kosher fish, so you have the various ways that we can know that it's from kosher fish, such as if you have a kilvis in there or whatever. But if not, then yeah, you would need a hasher on it. Okay. So now we're going to start talking about, we talked briefly yesterday about kuvei dogim, which is fish fat or fish eggs or whatever. So here, now we're going to talk about it in more detail. Omer bruna omerad. Kuvei dogim v'ubron, the guts of fish, meaning fish fat, and v'ubron, and their eggs, such things can only be bought from a mumcha, because otherwise you don't know whether they came from a kosher fish or not. So again, a mumcha, we discussed before whether a mumcha means somebody who's trustworthy as far as kashrus, or whether it means maybe he's not even trustworthy necessarily as far as kashrus, but at least he's an expert in what he does, and therefore he's not going to want to compromise his professional reputation. He's not going to want to sell something which afterwards it turns out is from the wrong species, and his reputation is going to suffer. So Romi lay ula lot of distoy in biri. So ula pointed out a contradiction to the distoy of biri on this teaching that we're saying over here. This that we're saying that in order to buy fish eggs, you have to buy them from a mumcha because otherwise they might have come from a tray for fish. The problem with that is if Rav is saying that such things can only be bought from an expert, again, somebody who's trustworthy on kashrus or an expert, as the case may be, miklal the dog tamei islay over, that implies that treifa fish have eggs, and therefore you have to be concerned that what you bought may be eggs from a treifa fish, or a mini. But I have a contradiction. The Gemara discusses in Bechoros The Gemara discusses a bit over there about the biology of different kinds of creatures, land animals, and
friends.
One second. And the Gemara there in Bechoras lays down some rules about certain biological things that are true of kosher versus trefer animals or birds or what have you. And one of them is dog tomei mashrit, trefer fish give birth to live young, dog tahar matel basin. Kosher fish lay eggs. So in that case, then, how are you concerned about eggs from trefer fish in the first place if they give birth to live young? What eggs?
What do you mean the biological things?
Live young, exactly what it sounds like. The same way as human beings, no, yeah, small fish. The same way as mammals give birth to live young. They don't lay eggs and then they hatch. The same thing. Trefa fish are the same kind of thing. They give birth to actual little fish, as opposed to kosher fish lay eggs and then the eggs hatch and they're in the mud, in the sand at the bottom of the river or the bottom of the ocean or whatever. So therefore, the trefa fish on the face of it don't have eggs in the first place. Why should you have to buy eggs from a mumcha? What concern is there that they might have come from a trace of species? Okay, so the answer is smimikan ubron. You're right, you have to erase the word ubron from this teaching. This that Rav Aruna is saying in the name of Rav must only apply to kirvei dogim, must only apply to the fish fat or fish guts or whatever, but not to the eggs, because based on what we just said, there's no such thing as eggs from a trace of fish that you should have anything to be concerned about.
So every caviar is kosher?
One second. We're in the middle of the discussion over here. Hold on. You make a good point, but that's what we have to discuss. We'll go through the sugya and we'll see.
Okay.
However, Amalei Rav Zeira, but Rav Zeira says to Rav Dikstoy or to Ula, Loitismi, no, you don't have to delete the word ubron from the Braisa. Kavayu matile beitzinu, because both koshera and shreifa fish do have eggs. Ella, the difference is they're mashrus machus, they're mashrus mufnim. The only difference is that kosher fish lay the eggs still as eggs, and then they hatch on the riverbed or the seabed or whatever, as opposed to zem mashrus machus, that the live young come out of them after they're already laid. Zem mashrus mufnim. Today for fish, what happens is they have eggs. The eggs develop inside the mother. After that, they hatch inside the mother, and then live fish come out. So therefore, at some stage in the development, they have have eggs as well. So therefore, back to the question of caviar, which is what we're dealing with over here. Yes, says Rav Zeira, trefa fish can have eggs before they hatch into live young inside the mother's body, and therefore you have to be careful. Therefore, that's what Rav is saying. You can only buy them from a mumcha.
When the mother releases them, they release them as...
No, so that's the point. No, so that's the point. In other words, that within the mother, after the eggs are developed, they hatch, they break open inside the mother, and the live young come out, and then they come out of the mother that way as live young. As opposed to the, so she doesn't lay eggs, right? But there are eggs within her body at some point, right? Okay. So there is such a thing. However, then the Gemara asks,
Yeah, right.
Okay, so wait, we'll get to the details about caviar soon, actually. We'll also talk about a distinction that the Beit Yosef makes as far as the color of it. Wait. Okay, fine. The question still is, Loma li mumcha? Fine, the question still is, why do you need davka to buy from a mumcha? Livdek the simonim. Why don't we just check the simonim of the eggs? The eggs have a certain set of simonim, just like we discussed before about kosher versus trefa fish, that besides the obvious simonim that the Torah says, snapper, kasketa, skins and scales, we said before that kosher fish have a different shape of head and a different type of spine. The same way, when it comes to the eggs, there's also a difference in shape and in characteristics. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, ki simoni beitzin kach simoni dogim. The same simonim as applied to eggs of birds, to distinguish whether they're from kosher birds or trefa birds, the same simonim apply to fish. And before we continue with what those simonim are, the Gemara interjects, what do you mean simonim dogim? What do you mean simonim of fish? Simonim dogim are snappers of kasketas, sibu. Simonim of fish, they have fins and scales. Eggs don't have fins and they don't have scales. What do you mean? What do you mean the simonim are the same? No. Elakis simonim basin kasimonim ubre dogim. No, let's correct the braisa that the same simonim as applied to bird eggs also apply to fish eggs. And what are they? The Elohim simonim basin. So what are the simonim of eggs of birds? How do we recognize what eggs are from kosher birds? Kol shekederes va'agogolos. It has to be that if the egg, first of all, is kederes, and roundish. Kajeres Rashi, so Kajeres Rashi explains me, Rashi, there's two different Gersoras actually, Kajeres and Kajedes. Kajeres is related to the kadu, which means the ball. Kajedes would be Meloshin kad, a jug, which is rounded. So Kajeres Vagogolos means that it's wide at one end and narrows towards the other end. Vagogolos, and it's round on the sides. In other words, it's not lens-shaped like a lentil or something. It's actually, it's round in three dimensions. It's round in three dimensions, but not symmetrical. It's big at one end and small at the other. Rosh Echad Chad, Rosh Echad Chad. One end of it is like a jug, so it's wider. It's a wider curve. V'roisha echad chad, and the other end of it is sharper, then tehora. Then we know that it's from a kosher bird, or at least that it could be from a kosher bird. And by the way, before we continue with the... it's oval, in other words. On the other hand, beiz rasher chadin, or beiz rasher chadin, on the other hand, if both ends are sharpish, or both ends are roundish, so it's more symmetrical, then tmeya. Then we know that it's from a treta bird.
Like an ostrich,
for example, has eggs that are almost symmetrical, that are rounded on both sides. And you have some other today's birds that are more where the egg is pointy on both is more pointy on both sides. They say, of course, by the way, I don't remember the source of it. I mentioned it briefly on the WhatsApp that these simonim that apply to kosher eggs are also what a person needs in order to be a successful talmid chacham, in order to learn Torah successfully. You need a broad bottom, you need to have this flesh, and on the other hand, you need to have a sharp head. So in that sense, a Talmud Chacham is like a kosher egg. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the point is that the same thing applies as far as fish eggs, that if they have that shape, then you know they're from a kosher fish, and if not, then not. And the Braisa continues, as other synonym of eggs, chelmoin mibachutz v'chelboin mibifnim, if you find the yolk on the outside of the egg and the white inside of it, then tmeya, then we know it's from a tzreita bird. On the other hand, if the white is on the outside and the yolk is on the inside, like we're used to it, tahor, then it means it's from a tahor bird. What if chelmoin v'chelbon me'urovin zebezeh? What if the white and the yolk are mixed together?
Scrambled eggs,
right. But what does it mean in terms of what species did it come from naturally that way? Zuhi basis asheret. Then you know that it's an egg of asheret, which means obviously it means it's safe, but. But besides that, it means trace, it also means, therefore, Rashi says, if the embryo starts developing inside the egg, and then a hole were to be punctured in the shell of the egg, and you touched that egg, then you would become tummy. Because you touched a dead sheret, functionally a dead sheret, because not alive yet, it only started developing.
Is it considered a sheret?
It's considered a sheret once it reaches a certain size. The minimum amount of a sheret that's metame is kadosha, is the size of a lentil. And in fact, the Gemara mentions in some places, the reason for that is because when a sheret starts developing, when the embryo first is noticeable, it's the size of a lentil. So that's how the sheret becomes. So you have this egg inside which an embryo is developing. Of a sheret, or one of the shemona shrotim, and there's a hole in it, and you touch the egg, then you're going to become tummy for having touched the sheret. So that's why it's important to know. That's why it's important to be able to know what's the sheret, the egg of a sheret versus the egg of the eggs of other species. Anyway, going back to our Gemara over here, the point is, therefore, so what are you telling me that you need to buy fish eggs zavka from a mumcha, from somebody who's trustworthy, if we see that all you need is the money? Now, Tosfos brings up the point, and many other Rishonim also bring up the point. The Gemara might well have answered that actually in Chulin, where the Gemara brings up the same Braita and discusses over there about bird eggs. The Gemara concludes over there the simonim of eggs are not actually something valid on a Daraisa level. You can't necessarily say that they were given, that once you have these simonim, once you have an egg that's sharp on that's pointy on one end and rounded on the other, that's definitely kosher. You'd still have to know. The person who sells you the eggs still should be able to tell you what species it came from. So why don't we say the same thing over here as far as fish eggs? Why does the Gemara have to find a different answer? So actually,
in Chulin, the Tosfos answers
that actually maybe there is a difference. Maybe in fact the simonim of bird eggs are not valid on a Daraisa level. You still have to check into it further. But maybe fish eggs, yes. Therefore, our Gemara could assume that that would be good enough, and the Gemara has to go and find a different answer, why in this case you can't use them. But that's one answer Tosfos says. Another answer Tosfos says is that over here what you have is, first of all, that you have the simonim, and second of all, the person that you're buying them from, even if he's not a mumcha, he's saying that they come from a certain kosher of fish.
You have to believe him?
That's the point. In other words, if you have the two things taken together, Tosfos argues, if you have the simonim and the person is telling you, even if he's not a mumcha, that they come from a certain fish, then you should be able to believe him.
Hmm.
So that's another answer as well. You have different other answers. Including that maybe our Gemara is talking not according to the final halacha. Maybe the final halacha is in fact what it says in Cholin over there, that the simonim of bird eggs and of fish eggs are not daraisa. In other words, you can't rely on them 100% of the time. And therefore, fine, our Gemara is assuming that you could, and therefore the Gemara is going to have to give a different answer. But maybe the halacha is not like that. Maybe in order to eat fish eggs, you would actually have to be, you can't just rely on the simonim at all. You would have to have, as we're saying over here, buy them from a mocha, even if they're whole, even if our Gemara is going to continue. Omar Rava, Shani Moichu, the Rava answers the case that we're talking about over here is where the eggs have been mashed up. Therefore, you can't rely on the simonim. But again, according to some of the Rishonim, that answer is not necessarily needed according to halacha. The bottom line halacha, according to them, would be that even if the eggs have not been mashed up, even if they're in their original form, you can't necessarily rely on the shape of them, just as with bird eggs you can't, just as the Gemara establishes in Cholin that with bird eggs you can't, so also you can't with fish eggs. Therefore, that is why, even if they're not mashed up, you would need to buy them from a mumcha.
Once you buy them from mumcha,
if you buy them from a mumcha, then fine. The mumcha is telling you that. So again, if he's trustworthy on kashrut, then you can certainly believe him. And again, even if according to the argument that a mumcha means not necessarily a yid, but a goyish, a trader who has a professional reputation, same thing. He has a professional reputation. Then that would be the other argument that some of the Rishonim say. So anyway, so Omar Rava, Kshini Moichu, so Rava said, you're right. Or in our case over here, why do you need to buy them from a mumcha? Because they were mashed up. Therefore, the simonim aren't recognizable anymore, and therefore you need a mumcha. Implying, again, if they weren't mashed up, you would be able to rely on the simonim. So again, does that mean that's the actual halacha or not? That depends on these discussions between Tosfos and the other Rishon. Okay. What about Ulurab Dixtoi de Biri de Omat Smini Kan Ubron? What about then, according to the Dixtoi of Biri, who said that you don't have to worry about Ubron, you don't have to worry about fish eggs at all? There's no possible, because he said before that the fact is, he argued that Shreifa fish don't have eggs at all. Again, Reb Zeira had brought up the point that they hatch inside the mother. Reb Dixtoi from Biri did not accept that.
Maybe that was in Biri.
No, there's no difference between the fish in Biri and anywhere else. Biri is
guys lay your eggs differently here.
Yeah, come on. Anyway, Biri is a town, and Biri is a town in the Galil. Anyway, it's right near Tzfat. They don't have native fish living over there.
Streams.
Yeah, okay, maybe. You know, I don't think they have any permanent streams in that area.
How
anyway. Well, he had the Kabbalah from his Rebbein, but anyway, according to him, he took what the Gemara says in Bechoras that we mentioned before, that Shreifa fish don't lay eggs; they give birth to live young. Mm-hmm. He took it at face value; they have no eggs. So according to him, why is there a necessity for simonim on eggs of fish anyway? Mm-hmm. The fact is, we just quoted a braisa that said the same shape that apply to bird eggs apply to fish eggs. According to him, there are no such thing as tray for fish eggs.
Well, you know, we get the fish eggs from the fish.
Right.
Not from the bank of the river.
Understood. But according to the story of the Minbiri, he doesn't hold that Shreifa fish have eggs inside
them.
He holds that to begin with, they start developing live young inside
them. Even people have a little phase where it's kind of like an egg.
Fine, but they're microscopic. You can't see it with the naked eye. So he could argue the same thing is true of fish. So the question is, what does Rav Dixtoi de Minbiri do with the braisa that said, V'atanya kisimonim beitzim kach simonim ubre dogim? We just said before that the same simonim that apply to bird eggs also apply to fish eggs, implying there have to be simonim in fish eggs. But according to him, why would that be necessary? There are no today for fish eggs anyway. The answer is, lav terutzi matartis law. Didn't you anyway have to change the wording of the braisa? Because the original wording was the same simonim as applied to eggs also applied to fish, and we have to change that because eggs have a certain shape, whereas fish have fins and scales. So we anyway had to alter the words of the braisa.
How did we alter it?
We altered it by saying that it means ubre dogim, that it means fish eggs rather than the fish themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the same way, fine, if we have to alter the words anyway, so fine, I can also alter it my way. He will say that you change the wording of the braisa a little differently. You say the same simonim as applied to bird eggs apply to the guts of fish. The heichem ashkachas. Now, what are we talking about when we say the guts of fish? The simonic kirve dogim, the heichem ashkachas, the simonic kirve dogim sheyekad b'chad. So where do you find in the simonim of fish gut that you have one end rounded and the other end pointy? What part of fish gut is shaped like that? The answer is mashkachas l'beshopucha. The swim bladder. Fish have a bladder inside them full of air that helps them keep themselves straight, that helps them keep themselves upright while they're swimming. It helps keep them buoyant. In kosher of fish,
they have a bladder full of air
inside them, yeah.
So it should make them...
Well, it doesn't make them float on the surface, because the fact is you have the weight of their body, but you have that at least. And that at least allows them to keep themselves, to keep their balance. So therefore, so Rav Joisoy, Zimin Biri, will understand that the Braise is telling us the same simonim, the same shape, one end rounded, one end pointy that you have in bird eggs, that if you find a bird egg of that shape, then you know it's from a kosher bird. By the same logic, the same thing applies to Kirve Dugan, namely the swim bladder of a fish. If it's rounded on one end and pointy on the other end, then you know that it's a kosher fish, that it came from a kosher fish. That's how he would learn it.
To the extent of looking at the bladder, you might as well find out from the fins and the scales.
If you have the fins and scales available, what if you don't? What if the guy is just selling you fish guts by themselves, or what if the fish have already been scaled or whatever? But then, so he'll say you're able to check. You're able to check based on that. Well, no, I mean we have the whole that's the whole discussion. I was just mentioning whether these simonim are acceptable on a daraisa level or not. So yeah. There is, by the way, the Beis Yosef mentions another interesting detail in connection with this whole thing as far as fish eggs, which therefore ends up being negeya as far as caviar. Namely, the Beis Yosef says, all red fish eggs are mutter, all black ones are also.
Okay.
Now, why is that, he says? Because in earlier generations, the Rishonim checked into it. They found no trace of fish has red eggs. Therefore, red eggs are mutter. He says that there is one kind, maybe, there is one kind of trace of fish that has red eggs, but when you cook them, they become black. There's no kind that remains red after they're cooking. Therefore, red ones are mutter. Whereas black ones, there are some kosher fish that have black eggs and some that do not. And therefore, we ask all the black ones to be on the safe side because it's not always easy to tell which is which.
So I was in the buffet once and I had a black egg, fish egg.
Okay. I don't know how they did that.
Maybe it was gray or...
It's also possible they died, you know. Anyway, there are a couple of achronim who disagree with the Beis Yosef on that. Prichadash, for example, says, where on earth did the Beis Yosef come up with such a concept from? Master Shekel says that the Beis Yosef should have to answer for this at Shemayim, he's being matir with Osir and being asterim with Mutter. But nevertheless, though, the consensus of achronim is to accept the distinction of the Beis Yosef, that red ones are mutter and black ones are osur. So caviar, the popular types of caviar that they sell, are black. They come from sturgeon and whatever, which have black eggs, and we ask them, we don't even know necessarily whether the fish they came from are treif or not, but again, based on this distinction that some of them are treif and some of them are not, then we ask them, misafet. But the red ones, we say, are mutter. Fine. Now the question becomes... You're buying fish egg paste. You're buying caviar that's already been made into a paste from somebody who's not a mumcha. What should you do then? Is there a way to know whether it's kosher or not? Well, that's the question. Is there a way maybe to be able to? Omer Rav Yehuda, kiven de omer ani malach de mutarin. So Rav Yehuda says, if that person says, I myself salted these fish, and I saw that they were kosher to fish, and I took out these eggs from them, then mutarin, then they're mutar. Because then even if he's not a mumcha, he recognized the fish that they came from. He's not a mumcha. He's not an expert. He's not necessarily trustworthy in kashrut. So he's not necessarily a professional who sells these things on a constant basis. But in this particular case, he went fishing one day. He caught a fish. He himself tells you, I salted this fish and I took out the eggs. Then fine, you can accept that. Rav Nachman says that's not enough. He would actually have to show him the fish themselves and say that these are the fish from which I took out these kravayim, these guts or these eggs or whatever. Now, Rav Yehuda followed his own shita, and he gave instructions to Ada Daila. Daila, Rashi says, means the waiter. So they would hire him. They would hire, not so much the waiter. Actually, Rashi says the chef. Like they would hire him to cook for sudas or whatever. In modern Hebrew, they got the word dayal means a waiter or flight attendant or something. They got it from by understanding the Gemara here as meaning a waiter, but according to Rashi, it seems to mean more chef. Anyway, the point is, Rav Yehuda gave a psak halacha to Ada Daila, given to Amar, ani malachim mutari. And as long as this person, even if he's not a mumcha, says, I myself faulted them, then that itself is enough and we can accept that. And that is, in fact, the halacha, like Rav Yehuda, not like Rav Nachman. So in short, you can buy fish egg paste, then from a non-mumcha, as long as he's able to say, ani malachim, that I myself faulted them and took them out of a kosher of fish.
You don't have to ask them.
You don't. He'll tell you what kind of fish it was. He'll tell you that I saw that they were dogim tahor, that they were kosher of fish. That's all you need. If they're not mashed up, then we're saying if they're not mashed up, then we're saying you don't even need that. We said you can look at the simonim, although we discussed the issue that the Rishonim discussed whether the simonim themselves are enough. And if you buy them from a mumcha, then you're good either way. Continuing back, the Mishnah has continued with all the shel chiltis. Another thing you're allowed to buy from a goy and eat is a leaf of chiltis. Again, chiltis being this sharp herb that they use for medicinal purposes. In English, it's called asafoetida. If you look at the English word fetid is in the middle of it, which means smelly, and in fact, it has a very sharp smell. I'm given to understand, I looked it up on Wikipedia, they say they use it even nowadays in Indian cooking, so I don't know, I don't think I've ever had Indian foods, I don't know, I have no idea what it would be like, but I think a lot of the time they use it for medicine. Anyway, the point is that we said a couple of Mishnayos ago, we said you're not allowed to buy a piece of chiltis from a goy and eat it because you may have cut it with a trefa knife, and the sharpness of the chiltis will cause the trefa that's absorbed into the knife or on the surface of the knife to become tasty, and therefore it'll give it a taste of Easter. But we said, but our Mishnah said you're allowed to buy a leaf of chiltis, a whole leaf from a goy and eat it. So the question is, kita? Well, that's obvious. It wasn't cut with a knife. Why would you think there's any issue with it? The answer is, you're right, but the chiddush of the Mishnah is if you have little pieces of chiltis that are stuck to the leaf, or that are stuck to the keli. Mao de tema, so you might have thought, so where are these little pieces coming from? Maybe a goy took pieces of chiltis that he cut with his knife and put them into the container or put them on the leaf or whatever, and therefore those pieces should be altered. Kamash Malan, therefore the Chiddush of the Mishnah is you don't have to worry about that. What happened all it was is these pieces were stuck to the leaf, and then they slipped off. Ishtaruki means they slipped. They slipped off the leaf onto the keli, and that's it. And they came along with it. They were originally stuck to the leaf. They weren't put there by a goy. And therefore they weren't cut by him, and therefore there's no problem.
What do they look like?
They look like little pieces. They look like little pieces. The chiltis itself, actually, what they use is little pieces of the little pieces of resin. Or what it is the chiltis itself is an extract that comes from the roots of the plant. They have the little pieces of resin or whatever that could get stuck to the leaf, right? To the leaf. But the point is that they got stuck to the leaf, so fine. There's no problem that a goy may have put them in there.
As long as the leaf is intact,
right? And some of the Rishonim have a different gear stuff over here, which boils down to they understand it differently than Rashi, that the pieces that are stuck to the leaf are mutter, but the pieces that fall onto the keli, not necessarily, because those if they were stuck to the leaf, how did they get loose and fall into the keli? Those you would have to be concerned about.
Only the ones
that are stuck to the leaf are going to them, right? Fine. Then we said, the next thing we said in the Mishnah that you're allowed to eat if you buy it from a goy is the zeite gluskoi tamagugolin. You have heated up olives that are in the shape of a gluska, of a round loaf. So we discussed yesterday, you put the olives inside a round container to start pressing against each other and heating each other up so that they soften, and then when you press them, you'll get much more oil out of them. So those kinds of olives, you're allowed to buy them, you're allowed to buy from a goy and eat. So the question again is, do you have, it looks like, it comes out looking like a cake made out of a bunch of olives that were placed together in a keli and left to heat up over there in Sofen. So the question is, kitta, isn't that obvious? What would be the problem with, what could be the problem with such olives? The answer is, lo nitzucha afagav derot bitruva. Yes, but the reason why the Mishnah had to tell us is the case. Suppose that the olives are very, very soft. So soft that the pit will even fall out of it on its own. Now, why are they so soft? Ma'u detema chamra ramabu. You have to be concerned, maybe you would think, maybe a goy put wine on them, and that's why they're so soft. And his wine would be osir. Kamash malon, no, the chiddush is, hani machnas mishcho derahu. The reason why these olives have become so soft is because of the oil that's oozing out of them. We don't have to suspect that the goy mixed in wine with it.
What's the difference? The oil is
because oil, because if it's just oil, then it's mutter. Oil of goyim is mutter.
Yeah, but what makes them soft?
It makes them soft, yeah. But if they're so soft, you might have thought that maybe he added another ingredient. No, they just become soft like that by themselves.
So they have to ooze.
Well, yeah. But Rabbi Yossi have a shlochin asurin. But Rabbi Yossi had said in the Mishnah that the shlochin olives are asur. The hechidami shlochin. What is the definition of shlochin? Am Rabbi Yossi b'chanin a kosha oich zebiyadei v'gari nafin ishmetes. If they're so soft that when you pick up the olive, the pit falls out on its own. So then it's so soft. Rabbi Yossi is concerned that maybe in fact he did mix in some wine or something. Well, once it becomes real, because you're not familiar with olives when they're really soft like that. We don't press olives for olive oil nowadays. Our olive oil we buy in bottles from the store. But if you were involved in the olive pressing business, then you would know. Yeah. Okay.
You're not Italian.
Yeah. All right. Then we said in the Mishnah, Hagovim Haboyim Fula. We said that if you buy locusts, kosher ones. So we said, if you buy them from the slula, from the basket sitting in front of the storekeeper, or goes to the storekeeper, then they're also, because he may have sprinkled wine on them to keep them fresh. On the other hand, if you buy them from the heptic, then they're mutter. A heptic means a pile.
They're still in a pile,
then they're mutter, because you're not going to put wine on them, because they stay in the pile for a significant amount of time, and therefore the wine would end up ruining them. He only puts wine on them short term.
You see them on the pile.
Right. So, turn it up on them, we learn in a blister. Hachagovim, again, locusts, v'hakafritin, and these shells around the flat fruit that we discussed the other day, where the shell itself is sometimes pickled and eaten. V'hakafloitis, and leeks. Haboyin mina oyster, if they come from the storehouse of a goy, umina hefkek, or if they come from the pile, umina spina, or if they come from a boat, where you brought a boatload of them. All of those are mutarin. All of those you're allowed to eat because again, there's no problem of wine on them because again, if they're kept there long term stored, wine would spoil them. Therefore, he wouldn't do it. And Tosfos points out, by the way, the reason why it lists them in that order is each one is a greater chiddush than the other one. The oitzer is very long term storage, so he wouldn't do it. The heptic is less is medium term storage, so you would think maybe he would sprinkle wine on them, but no. And then a spinner is shorter term even than a heptic, so you would think maybe for that short term, the amount of time it takes to bring the boat from point A to point B, he might sprinkle wine on it. No, he would only do it if they're in the basket already. If he knows he's going to be selling them today, you know, basically. So those are all mutter. And Rashi also points out, by the way, that as far as the leeks. There's also no issue of bishul akum in them again, because leeks can be eaten raw. And as far as geulah over kachavim, as far as the fact that it may have been cooked in a treif pot, again you have the same issue of nois and tamlis gam that we discussed before. That if they're cooked in a pot with treif in it, then it'll ruin the taste of it. So those are allowed. On the other hand, hanim korin b'kafluza. On the other hand, the ones that are being sold in the store, in the shuk, Rashi says, in the marketplace. In front of the storekeeper, those are asurin, those things, the locusts and the kafritin and so forth, are also because the goy will sprinkle wine on them while they're sitting there to keep them fresh, and therefore they'll become asur. The same thing, apple wine, apple cider, of goyim, haboyin mina oitzer, mina hefkek, mina slula mutar, and same thing, if they're brought from a storehouse or from a pile or from the slula. So over here, slula actually would mean a basket, and we said before, basket is no good. So it should really be a spina. It should be the spina. They come from a boat, like before. Then they're mutar. Right.
Because he's going to pour wine.
Exactly. So then again, mutar, and then again, it's mutar, because again, the goy is not going to put wine in them if it's being kept for long or even medium or even short-term storage, because wine will eventually spoil it. He would only do it when it's going to be, when it's right about to be sold, right? But if it's being sold in the store, in the market, then it's also, because at that point they would mix wine with it. So, a story in that connection, as far as apple cider or
wine. Why do you say that's about these things and not anything else you could pull
wine? It's whatever else. So it's first of all, whatever it's normal to put wine into, but also you have the issue that we've discussed earlier in the Perek, is the thing that we're talking about more or less expensive than wine? If the apple cider, for example, is less expensive than wine, we don't assume that he's going to pour wine into it, because why would he pour a more expensive liquid into a cheaper one and sell it at the cheaper price? But if the apple cider is more expensive than wine, then he might. Then he might. But even then, we're saying he would only do it right before he's going to sell it, only at the point of sale, because if he does it any earlier, it'll spoil. So in this connection, turn it up on. Pam achat choshu Rebbe b'meyav. One time Rebbe had a stomachache. Omar, so Rebbe said, is there anybody around here who knows whether apple cider made by goyim is also a mutter? Omar, the son of Rebbe Shmuel b'Rav Yehi, so Rebbe Shmuel b'Rav Yehi says,
it has fermented already.
Yeah, we're talking apple cider. In other words, it's already fermented, yeah. So is there anybody who knows whether it's mutter? Omar, the son of Rebbe Shmuel b'Rav Yehi, pam achat chosh abba v'meyav, one time my father, Rebbe Yehi, had a stomachache. They brought him 70-year-old apple cider made by goyim, the shot of an isafa, and he drank it, and he was cured. What's the point that it was 70 years? The point that it was 70. What?
The
shaila was whether they mixed wine into it. So
they mixed wine.
So that's the point. In other words, if it's 70 years old, we know for sure they didn't mix wine in it, because we just established before that they wouldn't put wine in it when it, until it's about to be sold. So therefore, when it was 70 years old, then they knew it was good.
Can it remain good at 70 years?
I guess so. I guess it's packed properly. I don't know.
It's whiskey, they have remained for a while.
I guess so.
Is it possible at all?
No, if it's wine, no. If it's wine, it wouldn't be possible. No. Okay. So Rebbe says to him, you had such an important piece of information in your hand, and you were withholding it all this time, and I was inside. Why don't you volunteer the information right away? So they checked into it, and they found, one guy, he had 300 barrels of 70-year-old apple cider, the shasa, and so Rebbe drank from it, and he was healed. Omer, and Rebbe said, famous expression, Baruch HaMokam Shemotzer Elam HaMashayimrim, blessed is Hashem, who handed over his world, who gave over his world to people who guard it. In other words, the simple meaning of it is, in other words, that Hashem arranged it, that there should be people who go and guard these things and then make sure that they're available for when they're needed. Like this, why would a guy think to have 300 barrels of cider like that maturing by him for 70 years? Hashem arranged it, so that it'll be available. So that it'll be available when Rebbe needs.
But if you say there was mixed in wine, what did they drink?
No, there wasn't. There's not mixed in wine. That's the point.
There was not,
because wine would spoil it. They would only mix in wine right before they sell it. Right. Also, Marshall points out another nuance in it. Also, we know that Hashem originally put Adam and Chava in Gan Eden, and He told Adam that you're in here la'avdo l'shomer. You're in here to work the Gan Eden and to guard it and to keep it. Which implies, in other words, as long as they were in Gan Eden, you don't really have free reign on anything you want in the garden. You can eat whatever you want, fine. We call it Tagon Ochel Tochel, but it doesn't really belong to you. You're only a shomer. After he was kicked out in Gan Eden, then Hashem said everything that's in the world is under man's control. So when Rebbe says Baruch Shemasu Elam LaShomerim, what he means is blessed is Hashem, who originally we human beings had only the job of being Shomerim, only of being watchmen, but not actually owning what's in the world. And now Hashem gave over the world and made it available and made it freely available.
Doesn't mean we have ownership of it.
Well, it does. Shemayim Shemayim LaShem, but that's the point. You know, as Marshall was saying, there was a distinction in that between before the Chet Hadas and after it. Before that, it was Hashem's world, and we're only there to guard it. And fine, a guard is allowed to eat from what he's guarding or whatever. But other than that, we didn't actually really have a bible over it. Afterwards, now we have some Moser along with the Shemim that Hashem gave over the world and put it under the ownership of us human beings who originally were only Shemim. Ben Yo Yodo also points out, by the way, the reason why Shen Rim in the plural, he says, is because different people, you have different people who come up with ideas of saving different things. This guy had an idea of having a storehouse of apple cider where he himself didn't know the reason, told that he needed it. Somebody else has an idea to save something else or whatever, and eventually we all see how it's all part of Hashem's plan.
Okay. Are we going to look for 70-year-old cider?
If we have a stomach ache, yeah.
You can find 70-year-old cider.
Okay.
Then we said in the Mishnah
of Achein L'Truma. We said the last words of the Mishnah were the same hold true as far as Truma. So what does that mean? My Achein L'Truma. What's the connection between Truma and locusts that are sold out of a basket in the store? The same distinction that we're saying between what's in front of the storekeeper versus what comes out of the storehouse or whatever, the same distinction applies. If you're buying food, if you're buying produce from a koyan who is suspect of selling truma as cholin. Now, truma is much cheaper than cholin. We know from various places in Gemara, truma can only be eaten by koyanim, it can only be eaten by tara. So therefore, usually, if you were to sell truma, and you have cases where you're allowed to sell truma, usually it would get a much cheaper price than cholin. But now you have a person, a koyan, who has truma, and he's known to be suspect of taking that truma and selling it, pretending that it's stolen in order to sell it for a higher price. So now, if you're buying from him, you're not allowed to buy from anything that's in the basket in front of him in the store. But anything that he buys where he takes it out of the warehouse or out of the pile or out of the boat, that is mutter. Now, why the distinction? Why should we allow it in those cases? Because in those cases, we figure, with the case of buying these things from a goy, the problem was whether he sprinkles them with wine or not. So when he has it right in front of him, he'll sprinkle them with wine. When they're in storage, then he won't because they'll spoil. Here with the koyan, it's a different issue. Irtusi mirta. A koyan would be this choshud would be afraid to try anything funny with anything that's in his warehouse or in his pile or whatever. He's afraid. Literally means he's shaking. Sogar, because he figures, Shami Be Rabbanan, that Rabbanan may hear of what I'm doing, that I'm illegally selling this as cholin when really it's truma, umaksu de leminai, and then they're going to confiscate my entire warehouse. So therefore, he would be afraid to do any such thing with what he has in his warehouse or in his ship or what have you, as opposed to what he has right in front of him. Okay, so if the Rabbanan catch on that I'm selling it, fine, I'll forfeit what's in the basket in front of me. It's a big deal. It's only what I was planning to sell today. It's a small amount of material. So therefore, you can't buy what's in front of him, but you can buy from his warehouse, because he'll be afraid to do any such thing with the food. And it was not his reputation, but he's afraid that Rabbanan will catch on and confiscate everything in his warehouse or everything in his pile. It's not really a matter of his reputation. It's a matter of that he'll be ruined financially. Not a matter of his reputation. He'll be ruined financially because his produce, his whatever that he's selling, will be taken away.
Koyan
is still a koyan. Koyan balaveret is still a koyan. Koyan balaveret can still even duchen. It says in Shulchan Aruch, there's certain averes for which a koyan is not allowed to duchen. And in particular, one of them is that he marries a woman that he's not allowed to. I forget what other ones there are. But other than that, though, in general, if he's a Baal Averus, it doesn't matter. We're not getting the bracha from him. We're getting the bracha from Hashem.
If he hates someone in the congregation.
He hates someone in the congregation, he shouldn't be giving. Yeah, it doesn't matter, yeah.
But he's
still a Kohen.
To
give
a bracha.
Yeah. Israel Shechat Israel. Israel Shechat Israel. Kohen Shechat Israel. Kohen Shechat Israel. It's three. Hadron Aloch Ein Mamdi. Okay. So now this new perek, we're going to get more back to a little closer to the topic of our Masechta, Avodah Zarah. We're going to talk about actual Avodah Zarah, actual statues, and things that are used for Avodah Zarah. What are the dinim of them? When are they Osir Ba'ana? When are they not Osir Ba'ana? That's going to be basically the subject of our perek. And in the course of it, we'll also talk about, for example, nowadays you don't find statues that are worshipped so much, but you have courses that are worshipped. What are the din with those? So we'll get to that as well. The Mishnah starts off, Kol ha-tzlomim asurin, all kinds of statues are also bahana. In later times, tzlom came to be the word for a cross, but in Gemara term, Mishnah and Gemara terminology, it means actual statues.
And why you use the word tzlom instead of your
special
or something like that?
Tzlom is, so some of them are first and actually mean specifically images of human beings, so tzlom or tzlom alakim, but whatever. Tzlomim is another word for it.
Well,
Sometimes it has an image of Yosel on it. True also. Yeah, true. Okay. So, kol ha-tzlamim asurin, all tzlamim, all statues are asur b'ana, v'pnei she'en me'vodin pa'am achas ha-shana divrei Reb Meir. Because Reb Meir says all of them are worshipped at least once a year. You have some of them maybe that they don't worship on a regular basis, but once a year, at least they go and worship them. The Rambam says specifically what we're talking about is they figure out based on astrology or whatever, they make statues representing the different times of year or the different mazolas or what have you, and they worship them at what they consider to be the appropriate time. Okay, not necessarily on one particular day a year. What we mean is, in other words, this statue will be worshipped on January 1st, this one will be worshipped on January 2nd, and so forth. Each one will have its day. No, it's only also if the statue has in its hand a stick, a sipper, or a bird, a kander, or a bull. And we'll see in the Gemara why those are, if it's holding one of those things, and the Gemara is going to add a couple of others, then it shows that it's worshipped as an actual god, as an actual deity.
Not a human being.
Otherwise, no, we'll try. A figure of a human being that's holding a stick or a bird or what have you, then we know that they made it as an object of worship. Otherwise, it means they just made it for decoration. Like nowadays, I mean, like you go to Grand Army Plaza or whatever, you got statues of people all over the place. Nobody worships them. They're just there for decoration. Yeah. So in those times also, even though they're actually worshipped of it as order, nevertheless, they have statues that are just for decoration, and they have statues that they actually worship.
Although they have sticks and
that's the point. So if they have one of those things, so nowadays, that's not the issue. Nowadays, there's a shach points out, practically speaking, it depends what people worship in a certain place. And you go, for example, to India or whatever. You go to Japan or whatever, and they have all these Buddhas all over the place. They're not holding anything, but they're still objects, whatever they are. So obviously it depends. And the Mishnah is listing over here how they did it in those days. Obviously it depends. It depends on the circumstances in different places. Okay. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Ach Koshi Yesh V'Yadei Kol Dover. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, the criteria is if it's holding anything. Even if it's not one of these things. It's not a stick, it's not a bird, it's not a bowl. But it's holding something, still means that it's an object of worship. Okay. So, now we can want to start off. If Reb Meir is saying that all these statues are worshipped at least once a year, then why would the Rabbanon say that depends what they're holding or not? The fact is, we don't see, Rashi says, the Chachamim are not disagreeing with Reb Meir's premise and saying that only the ones that are holding sticks or what have you are worshipped. It sounds like they accept his premise that even ones without sticks or whatever might be worshipped. So then why would they say they're Motsubana? And also, some of them, of course, the choice that the Rosh, I think, says that we prefer to say that the Chachamim don't argue on the seer. They don't argue on the actual facts on the ground. They argue on the interpretation of them. If Reb Meir is saying the fact is that all these statues are worshipped at least once a year, then how are the Chachamim disagreeing with that? The answer is Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef. Amar Rav Yosef, bin mekoyme shor Reb Meir hoyo obdin oisa pan achas bashona. It's in Reb Meir's area where he came from. They used to do that. They used to worship all these statues at least once a year. So why does that make a difference? Reb Meir de Chayesh Lemilta, Reb Meir, who was always concerned in halacha about the minority, he says, even though we know Achir Am Lachir, nevertheless, when you have a minority of something, we learned in the previous parak, for example, we learned about Gvinas Beis Umyaki, we talked over there about how the mayor holds that you have to be concerned about the miyot. You have most of the calves over there were shechted for Avodah Zarah, and that's a significant miyot of the number of animals that are shechted there altogether. Therefore, he says the cheese made from them is also. So here, a similar concept. He says you have to be choshesh for the miyot. Gozer, Shah Makimus, also Oisamakim, namely he makes a Xera that you can't have Hanah from statues anywhere else because you might confuse them with that place. But Rabbanan, the Lechai Shinim also.
So Reb Meir, the Miyut makes the Klal?
Well, so what Reb Meir would say is like this. You have places where they definitely worship them, where they definitely worship all of them. You have places where maybe they do, maybe they don't. You have places where we have no reason to think that they do at all. But Reb Meir holds, given that you have, in category B over there, you have a Miyut of places where they worship all of them, then therefore we have to be concerned about that, even in other places where they don't necessarily, we still have to be concerned about that and ask for them to be on the safe side. But Rabbanan, the Lechai Shilim, we also let Gazer Shah Makarim as Otherwise in Makarim, but the Rabbanan who are not concerned about Miyot, they don't make such a Gzera. Yeah, one way that Mephoshim understand it is basically that you're talking about what we're making, that we're talking about not so much a gzera, but because you have a mirror of such places, therefore, it's not Rameir is not talking about a gzera per se, but he's saying that, therefore, he's saying the mirror of places makes it, therefore, it causes that you have now, now you have a real suffix of Ister anywhere, and therefore that causes it to be that causes it to be Ister. That's one explanation, and the Ran gives a different explanation closer to the wording of our Gemara over here, that it is actually Gzera. Fine, maybe you have, it is only a mute of places, but nevertheless,
you know. Or most likely according to the Ran, it's Gzera.
Right. So in your mayor's area, they worship all of them. So he says, now you have a mute. It's not a mute of a mute. It's a mute, and there is one mute, and therefore you have to ask it on that basis. Says your
mayor.
Yes, that's what we're saying. So one interesting thing to tie it in, we're coming up to Purim now. You know, we know that places that are walled since the times of Yeshua ben Nun read the Megillah on the 15th, and everywhere else reads on the 14th. The Shar HaMelech, one of the Purushim on Rambam, asked the question. We know there's a concept called Kavua Kamechsal Mechsadami. Whenever you have something established in its spot, we consider it a 50-50 chance. That comes up, for example, in connection with meat that you bought from a store where you're not sure which store you bought it from. We learned it in Sanhedrin in connection with a crowd of Jews and William or whatever. So why don't we say, therefore, that if you have a suffix, whether a city is ruled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, it's Kavua. There's a 50-50 chance that it is. Therefore, there should be meeting on the 15th. And yet we see you don't do that. So he says, based on our Gemara over here, you see, we don't say, what does Kavua mean? If you have, for example, the stores are Kavua, but the piece of meat, it's something you bought them from one of the stores, but now you're not sure which one you bought it from. That's called Kavua. When you have the cities themselves, the areas themselves, that are or aren't ruled, or in Al-Gamara over here, where they do or don't worship the statues, each city is in its own place. You can't say that one is Kavua relative to the other. Each one is in its own place, where it's not, it's here and it's not there. Therefore, Kavua doesn't apply to such things. And therefore, when it comes to our Gemara over here, according to the Chachamim, which is Halacha, we don't say that because you have that near to places where they do worship all of them, therefore all statues everywhere are altar. And similarly, when it comes to Purim, it comes place by place. And similarly, when it comes to walled cities from the times of Yeshua, if you know a city is walled, then yes. But otherwise, we don't say Kavua. We don't say
so
Kavua.
The difference between the 10 stores and the 10 cities is that the cities are in their own area, so you don't even calculate the other city.
Right, as opposed to the piece of meat could have come from any of the 10 stores.
Calculate
right.
All the other 10 stores.
Exactly.
You have the Kavua like you have in Hulu, like
right.
11
or right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Shalach, everyone. Thanks for joining.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye.